ye tve tat abhyasu yantaha
nanutishtanti me matam
sarvajnana vimudhanstam
Vidhi nashta na cetasaha.
Ye. Ye tu etad abhyasuyantaha na anutishtanti me matam. Sarvat jnana vimudhan tan vidhi nashtan achetasaha. So, this verse is really connected to the previous verse. The previous verse is for those who do have shraddha and have that anasuya, means they don't cavil or they don't criticize the teaching or the teacher out of jealousy. That's that asuya is that kind of a jealousy that causes you to put somebody down so that you can feel better about yourself. That's a bad one, okay? Yeah. So, just to go over this previous verse, and then we'll go to the next one, this 31. So, Bhagavan says that people, manavaha, those who are actually have this dharma shastra, comes along with the Vedas, which they need to follow. They need to follow the dharma shastra as passed down by Manu, because we have free will. The animals, you know, and other living creatures don't have on this plane. They don't have to worry about that. Their instincts take control of everything, and they just do naturally what is to be done within their own dharma. So no problem for them. But for human beings, we have free will. And since we have free will, some guidance is necessary. Like how to handle this free will, basically, is what amounts to. How to appropriately handle this free will in reference to the manas that has all kinds of things going on. You know, all kinds of raga dveshas, all different likes and dislikes, different inner child problems and hurts and pains and whatnot that can sometimes supersede dharma or what I know is correct. And so there's a lot in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Upanishads, in the Vedanta, as well as in the Karmakanda, the first part of the Vedas. There's so much about dharma just to give me kind of a structure along with the reasons for that structure that will allow me to have the most shanti possible in this life, the most relative shanti possible, the most relative sense of well-being that is possible. Because the instant we start to stray away from dharma, then my whole shanti, my whole system starts breaking down, actually, in terms of my sense of well-being and self-esteem and all of these type of things. So in this first verse, he says, the beings, those people who are shraddhavantaha and anusuyantaha, they have shraddha, and they are free from this type of jealousy or needing to put other people down for their own sense of being important and all of that. So these manavahas, they anutishtanti, they nityam anutishtanti, they always follow mematam, this teaching of mind. The mind is Bhagavan, is Ishwara. Not just Krishna. Krishna is an avatar of Ishwara. This teaching is a beginningless teaching. It comes with the Vedas. So those people who are always committed, they're always following this teaching of mine, of Bhagavan's, having Shraddha and not having this kind of hostile relationship with others whom they actually look up to. So that's the problem. They actually look up to the... When you're jealous of somebody, there's two major kinds of jealousy. One is the person or the thing that you want the other person has. So you're jealous of that person because they have what you want. There's another another kind of jealousy, though, where you're jealous of that person, not because that person has a person that you want. It's because they have more power or more friends or more shanti or more knowledge or more this or more that than you have, which makes you feel lowly, makes you feel less. And so in order to compensate that for that feeling less, you will put down what that person knows and who that person is. So that's the asuya. So a person who is anasuya, who doesn't have that, those manavas who don't have that, who have shraddha, means shraddha in the Vedas themselves and in the teacher, though they always follow, those people always following this matam of mine, they also muchanti, they also are liberate, also teyapi, they also muchante, they are liberated from karma. The idea here is they also gain knowledge, they also gain atmajnanam. So what this goes back to also is, you know, there are two nishtas. Krishna says there are two nishtas, two committed lifestyles that a mumukshu can follow in order to gain self-knowledge. One is the sannyasa, but the sannyasa, taking sannyasa, means that the other one, that neutralization of all of your binding desires, that prasada buddhi, has already taken place. Then that sannyasa lifestyle is perfect for you. You can just stay and study and teach and contemplate, and you're absolved of all rituals, of all duties that were previously enjoined upon you, even the duties toward your parents and toward your family, and toward all the duties toward the toward the devas, all of the rituals that were enjoined. You're freed of all of those, and all of those duties kind of collapse into the omkara, the pranava. And so then om becomes the om replaces all of these duties, and the om is really the nama, very sacred word that encompasses the whole reality, the whole universe. And so now as a sannyasi, you are abiding in that reality, the reality of the whole, that everything is Ishwara. Everything about me is, there is no karta, there is no doer. So either I take the vividisha sannyasa, I am committed, I have the karta, karma yoga buddhi is there, and I'm committed to gaining this knowledge. So I take, as one who wants this knowledge, I take sannyasa. Or the vidvat sannyasa means I have this knowledge and my guru gives me that vidvat sannyasa, recognizing, just a way of recognizing, and the orange just means that you're a jnani, you're a sannyasi, you have this knowledge. So vividisha sannyasa, so we have four the mumukshu, vividisha sannyasa, or we have karma yoga. And the karma yoga gives me the best of the two. This is what Krishna keeps telling Arjuna, it gives me the best possibility, the best field of experience to neutralize all of my raga dvesha, all of these likes and dislikes, to transform them all into non-binding desires so that my mind enjoys that shanti, or that beautiful relationship with Bhagavan, relationship with all the devatas, relationship with all beings, where that prasada buddhi is there and a recognition. I receive everything that comes my way as something from Bhagavan. It's also, you know, I receive and look at upon all beings. My relationship with all beings is my relationship with Bhagavan. So then your heart starts to open, because that's what's more important to me, much more important to me than these raga dveshas. Raga dveshas are actually just, as we'll see, they're just obstructions, because they're causing me to go along and try to gain from the universe what it actually doesn't have. And so the first thing we need to do is to start with, as we gain knowledge, is to start doing what's necessary to neutralize all of that. Because all I really need in terms of this upadhi for enjoying ananda, I am ananda. I don't need to enjoy ananda really, because I already am that wholeness and it's never covered. But if I want, from the standpoint of my mind and body, for the mind to have shanti, for the mind to have well-being, you know what I need? Shantavritti. That's all. If I want the mind to have a certain type of experience, where the all is well with me experience from the standpoint of the mind, you just need a shantavritti. The maybe the worst way of trying to get a shantavritti is trying to fulfill your desires, thinking that that's going to do it for me. It is just fraught with fear. It's fraught with obstructions, and it's so very, very time-bound. And even when you fulfill it and you have that moment of happiness, if it's not, you know, quickly replaced by another desire, even then that moment of happiness, all of a sudden the mind, brilliant as it is, realizes all the things that can come and take it away. And so then the ananda, you know, because my mind gets tense around that threat, when the ananda is gone, even though I still have the object of desire, but the object of desire was for my happiness. Now the happiness is gone, but I have the object of desire. So it's very, very highly disappointing in that way. And we don't have any exceptions to the story. That's another problem. That there are no exceptions to this story is good, because then we have something to figure out. This has never worked. And then from there it goes, and it never can work. It never can work. That's the dark night of the soul, but that's also what makes you a mumukshu. This isn't going to work. I will get lots of little desires here and there fulfilled, and a lot of little specks of happiness. This little speck and this little speck, this little light, this little light. But that's not what I want. I don't want little specks of happiness that go away. I want to just be whole and complete. That's what my longing is, because the longing of the mind, the longing of the upadhi, the longing of all upadhis, except for the Ishwara upadhi, who is everything. The longing of all upadhis is just let me be myself. I just want to be myself. I don't know how to say that, but that's what it is. I just want to be myself. I want to be whole and complete, because that's who I am. And I know it whenever I have that little glimpse. And this cannot work. What I'm doing cannot work, because it is all time-bound. Even the desire itself wears out. This desire, your desire is time-bound. You have it for a while. Then even if you fulfill it, that desire falls off. You don't want that anymore. You want this. So it doesn't matter. The whole thing is time-bound. So once you recognize that, then you look up to Bhagavan if you have any Shraddha, and you say, please, if there is a solution to this, Bhagavan, now is the time. Please help me. And it's real. It's a very, very real prayer. My father would say a prayer like this. One time I had to interview him and my mother. I was becoming a psychologist at the time. I had to interview them about their religious beliefs, you know. And so I was interviewing my father. We were sitting around the kitchen table. And I said, I asked him about it, and he said, well, I kind of feel like this. If there is a God, I am better off believing in him than if there isn't. And so that's why I believe. I don't really know. You know, but if there is a God and I don't believe him, that might really irritate him. So I'll just say, then for that reason, I believe in God. So as a mumukshu, you can say, Bhagavan, if you are there, you know, and if there is an answer to this problem, please help me. And it's a serious prayer. You say it in one way or another, you know. But it happens, because all of a sudden you don't have a solution. Nor can you, and in the not having the solution to this problem, it's not just that I don't have a solution now, it's that there is no solution, period, because of the very nature of the creation. So one becomes a mumukshu. So here with these two, once a person becomes a mumukshu, there is this recognition. And then Bhagavan says, good, okay, yes, I will teach you. This is in the Bhagavad, I will teach you. And then Krishna, Arjuna wants to say, well, let me go down to the forest and take sannyasa and gain this knowledge. Krishna says, that is not the best way. That is not the best way. And all through the Gita is showing that is not the best way because spending lifetimes in ajnanam, in that self-ignorance, you are programmed, completely programmed to go, as we'll be saying, toward your own swabhava, toward the likes and dislikes that are coming up in your mind due to past karmas, past experiences. Ah, I want this thing. You know, if you just imagine, just looking at the room and everything in it, of the whole room, this just make this be like your whole life, whatever you experience. Only this thing over here lights up. I want that. There's countless things that you could want. Literally countless things. But no, I want that one. You know, or I want that. Or I want that. Out of countless choices. So why do you end up picking one thing over another? Why do you end up doing that? That's what we say, it's the swabhava. It's all raga dveshas, that subtle likes and dislikes based on experiences that you've had in the past, good experiences and bad experiences. They act as samskaras for this set of experiences. If somebody's, you know, smile is like your mother who was so beloved to you, so beloved to you, then this person has a smile like that, then all of a sudden you really like that person. You're not really sure why, but when you think about it, it's like, well, I think it's because she smiles like my mom. And you can't do anything about it. You can't say, that's not a good reason to like that person just because she smiles like your mom. I know, but I still really like her. Yeah, that's how one, it's an amazing thing. And your dislikes are like that too. You know, like you meet somebody who has the same kind of accent. You know, probably in Sweden and Europe also, and even though everybody's speaking Swedish in this area, they have an accent, and in this area they have their own accent. It's like that in the States. There are hundreds of accents. They're all speaking English, but there's literally hundreds of accents. And once in a while, you run across somebody who has exactly the same accent as somebody else that you know. And if you don't like that person that you know, and this person with exactly that same accent comes along, chances are your first impression of that person is negative. Yeah. And say you like this person, you really like them, they have this, you know, accent, but you don't even think of it as an accent until you hear somebody else talking exactly like them with the same intonation, you really like them, then of course you really like this person. This is kind of the craziness, you know, crazy-making nature of our raga dveshas. They come from so many samskaras. Okay, so anyway, karma yoga has to do with neutralizing these raga dveshas that I actually have no control over. They're coming from the unconscious, they're coming from past lives, they're just landing on people. If they're binding desires, I'm giving my ananda, my happiness over to that, and then I have to work with all of the problems that that causes. So karma yoga buddhi, giving me that, you know, that prasada buddhi, is so profound, so beautiful, because it gives me that deep relationship with Ishvara, with all of the devatas, you know, with everything in my life. And so I become a participant in the creation and participant with Ishvara, you know, because the prasada buddhi I take as a blessing, you know, all that comes my way. So there's a relationship in that, just that prasada. So I get that type of inner freedom, I get the relationship with Ishvara and a mind that's available for this knowledge. Or if my mind is already available for this knowledge, because I have naturally that prasada buddhi from past work that I've done or past lives even, sannyasa. Because I already have the prasada buddhi, all I need is to gain knowledge. You know, otherwise, without the prasada buddhi, these raga dveshas are pulling my mind out into samsara. So that's the whole, this karma yoga buddhi, prasada buddhi, sannyasa, as the upayanishta, as the means necessary for having an antakarana, having a mind that's really available, you know, for this knowledge. And this knowledge takes place like that. It's all of the time bound, all of the time is this prasada buddhi, getting a mind that is really able and free to not only receive it, but hold it, right? Like the newspaper holding the coals has to become like that cast iron pot. So now he says, so he said, those who have Shraddha, the mumukshus, those who have this Shraddha, then this is primary for them. This is always what they do, this prasada buddhi. It's very important, dharma, the following the laws of dharma, you know, and receiving everything with this prasada from Bhagavan. The kaushalam, that kaushalam buddhi means being able to have the viveka in terms of dharma, adharma. I have that viveka in terms of dharma and adharma, and I have that prasada buddhi. That's the karma yoga, that kaushalam and prasada buddhi is really what is necessary to gain the antakarma shuddhi I need, or if I have that, I take sannyasa. So this is Bhagavan's teaching. This is the teaching of Ishwara in terms of gaining this knowledge. So those who have it, they whether they take sannyasa, which Ishwara is being advised not to do, and also if they stay with karma, they become liberated. They gain this knowledge. The karma yoga gives you the buddhi that is allows you to gain this knowledge, enough shanti. So it's sequential. Like as I gain that karma yoga buddhi, my mind gains the space that it needs, the shanti that it needs to gain this knowledge. If I already have that, I go to sannyasa, I just gain the knowledge directly. But both gain the knowledge, and both are dependent on that karma yoga too. You know? So that being the case, he says, you know, that those people that have the Shraddha, that understand this, that practice this all of the time, you know, they also gain this knowledge through karma yoga. But now he says, but those people who do not follow this teaching of mine Ishwara, of me, of the Lord, of Ishwara, those who do not practice it, who who are abhyasuyantaha, having that negative disposition, that jealousy, having that negative disposition toward the Vedas and toward the teacher, that alone, just that asuya makes it impossible. How can your heart be open to really seeing something or understanding something when you have a negative disposition toward it? You know, when we're a disposition where you want to put the person down or put the teaching down, you know, then you're not available. Right? So he says those people who are not available for this, sarva jnana vimudhan tan viddi. May you know that they are ones who are deluded, not just toward this knowledge or toward Ishwara, but they're deluded toward all knowledge, sarva jnanam, not just this, toward all knowledge, because there's a lack of viveka there. There's a lack of the ability to discriminate between what is right and wrong, what is true and false, even if you're given reasoning, if something is said and it has all of the reasoning that is there for you to understand it, and you reject it, you actually are rejecting it for no reason. Like say something is an obvious thing. I'm not talking about commitment to a religion or something like that, but all religions have dharma adharma. It's not just Hindus. It's not just Hindus or Christians or Muslims or everybody. Everybody has a commitment to dharma and adharma, you know. Human beings have a commitment to dharma adharma, even if they don't have a religion. But if that's not able to be understood, or if it's caviled, if it's kind of put down and poo-pooed, then that person's buddhi is not available for any type of knowledge, really, because the viveka is not there. Their own disposition is going to block them from that. And so he said, and such a person who is achetasaha like that, means they have no viveka, those people are naturally nashtan. They're at a loss. Nashta means to be destroyed, but it's not a permanent destruction. It's a destruction of complete. They're at a loss because nothing works. Nothing works on once you throw out dharma, if you throw out reasoning, you know, reasoning is important, you know. Say if there's something, there's certain facts that are substantiated. They're even substantiated by so many beings in terms of dharma and dharma, adharma, right and wrong. There's so many things we accept culturally as human beings in order to make a society successful and to do what is best for all beings. If that is caviled or tossed out, or you have no value for caring for others or caring for all beings or protecting the earth, you only have values. We're saying this because of the devatas and the whole karma yoga and all of the rituals. The rituals in the Vedas have to do with protecting all beings. The duty, my duty, it is to protect all beings. It means the beings that I come into relationship, and the beings include the devatas. The rituals that I do, the prayers that I say, are to give back to the devatas, to recognize them, to recognize my place in the creation, and thanks to them, I have air to breathe, I have clean water to drink. And so that kind of recognition and that gratitude is considered very human, very important. My gratitude to my parents, my gratitude to all those who have helped me, to all of my teachers. It's not just your guru. This is to life itself, you know. And so say if instead of having that relationship with those in my world, it's only about what I want. It means I'm only bound by the raga dvesha. If it's only about what I want, what I need, what is good for me in terms of my wealth or my desires, then I'm at a loss. In fact, I feel like an isolated person. It doesn't work, you know, it doesn't work. And so I feel myself as being as though destroyed because I'm at a loss. I don't feel any sense of connection. And so, as we'll see, these raga dveshas that rise up in the mind, if that's all I've got, just my raga dveshas, then I'm in trouble, you know? These raga dveshas that we have, these likes and dislikes that we have, need to be held by dharma, adharma. If dharma is not the container, you know, the lens through which I view and act on my raga dveshas, then it's only about me. No dharma. And so this is where the sense of, that's the aviveka. There can be aviveka between the atma and everything else, the atma, anatma. But here it's really the aviveka in terms of right and wrong, in terms of dharma, adharma. What are my responsibilities? What are my duties? What are my duties to others? You know, how to always put others or to put dharma first over raga dvesha. What if that isn't natural to me? Then I'm putting, just think about it. And it's very kind of awful when you think about the repercussions of it. I put my raga dvesha first over dharma. Then nobody else matters. Because dharma matters, always matters for you. Everybody knows that. We all know that there's nothing more important than dharma for how I am treated. So dharma's important, you know. I want people to love me, to be kind to me, to not steal from me, to help me when I'm down, you know, to support me when I'm desperate, to be a friend to me, you know, to be kind to me, to respect me, to care about me. You know, these are just, this, of course, this is how you should all feel, everybody, toward me. Right? But a normal person, you know, those who are normal people. Okay, just a normal people. Also know that because I feel that way, I know that you feel that way. That doesn't mean that we can always live up to that dharma, you know. We can't always live up to it because of the power of our raga dveshas. But that is our value, you know. And when we go against that value, our conscience doesn't feel good. So our conscience comes up, you know, and feels bad about that. And so always we learn, just as human beings, let me have this, I really want this, but not at the expense of Dharma. So that's how we continue to grow. But if a person who caviles against that or puts it down or criticizes it, because the whole Karma Yoga Buddhi is based on that. The only difference is we recognize that Dharma is Ishwara. There's an Ishwara, understanding of Ishwara in all of that. But the Dharma, even without an understanding of Ishwara, is there. And that's just the natural human teaching. But as a mumukshus, that Dharma is much more than just some sort of, you know, psychological law. It's a law of Ishwara himself. So that person, a person who doesn't have that viveka, that person is at a loss. And then they can get back, you know, by learning from their experience and then making some changes. Those changes have to be made, and you feel so lost and so isolated. So now, there's some questions that come up around it. So let's do this next verse.
Sadrisham cheshtate swasyaha. Prakritev jnana vanapi. Prakritim yanti bhutani. Prakritim yanti bhutani. Nigrahah kim karishyati. Nigrahah kim karishyati.
Sadrisham cheshtate swasyaha prakritehe jnanavan api prakritim yanti bhutani nigraha kim karishyati. Shankara introduces this verse with kind of an interesting thing. He says, tell me again, because of what reason, he says, do those people, from the previous verse, do those people not follow your teaching, Bhagavan's teaching? And then also, padadharman anutishtanti sudharmam chana anuvartate. Also, they find themselves doing the dharmas of other people that belong to other people, and not doing the dharmas that are being asked of them. They do what belongs to somebody else, not what is there for me to do. He says, how is it that these type of people who are totally opposed to you, pratikula means they're opposed to you, these people to you, Bhagavan, how is it that they are not really afraid of the doshas, of the evils, of the adharma, you know, the papa that is brought about from this type of from not following these laws? Why aren't they afraid of that? You know, wouldn't that be enough to stop people from doing it? This is what Krishna says. He says, even for a jnani, for a person who has jnana nishtha, who is really clear in their knowledge, even for them, right, they are cheshtate, they are responding, they are acting, moving about sadrisham in accordance with their own prakriti. Here prakriti means their own swabhava, their own nature. So he says, prakriti yanti bhutani, he goes, the beings, all these beings following their own prakriti, their own nature, then nigraha kim karishyati. So this is the first verse of two verses. So he says, what's the use then of trying to control anything? Because if you say, even for the jnani, they are also, you know, just acting from their own swabhava, whatever that may be, then if even for them they're following their own nature, then what's the use of any type of control? Where is that control going to be if even the Mahatma, the Jnani, is doing this? So Krishna's going to answer this in a really beautiful way. So let's do this next verse too, and then I can work with both verses as a set, okay?
Indriyasyendriyasyarte
Raga-dvesha-vyavasthitau
Tayorna-vashamagachet Tau yasya paripantinau
Tau yasya paripantinau
Indriyaha. Oh, sorry. Indriyasya, indriyasya arte, raga dveshau vyavastitau, tayor na vasham aga chet, tau hyasya paripantinau.
So Krishna answers, and then I'll just unfold this from the top. Krishna answers, you know, raga and dvesha, raga dveshau, raga and dvesha, your likes and dislikes, they are really abiding, they're landing on the objects of every sense organ. Indriyasya, indriyas mean of each sense organ, you know, the objects of these, of your sense organs, like the objects of the eyes and the ears and all the sense organs, where they're landing, that's where the raga dveshas are hanging out. You know, I want this. So the raga dvesha is in reference to this. I want that. The raga dvesha is always hanging out there in reference to that object, right? So all of these raga dveshas, the raga dveshas, they're abiding there in all of the sense objects. Some are lighting up to you, right? So all of your sense organs are landing on this or that or the other thing. And so that's where the raga dveshas are abiding. So now he says, tayoho navasham agachet. He says, for these, of these two ragas and dveshas, Don't let these raga dveshas, you know, come under, don't let yourself come under their control of these raga dveshas. Vashem agachit means these two, may not the control not be given to them. If that control is given to them, then they become your enemy. They become your enemy. And so let me just go through this and I'll make this clear. This is actually something I really started to learn this from the Mahabharata when I was like in my 23 or something, and I sat down for this major reading of this form thing. But one thing that is very clear in India and in Indian Dharma, we, whether you're a jnani or an ajnani or any human being, you are not responsible for the thoughts that arise, the emotions that arise, the likes and dislikes that arise. They just come. They're there. And they're there because of your past experiences in this life and also because of samskaras that you're bringing. You know, samskaras in the terms of raga dvesha that you're bringing from past lives and way, way past lives. So there's no way really for you to control your raga dvesha in terms of what's coming up, of what's arising in your mind. Just like there's no way to control the thoughts that are arising or the like Swamiji once said, you know, all kinds of funny thoughts come up in my mind. What difference does it make? I can't help it. A thought arises in your mind, what are you going to say? Now, from this point on, this thought is not to come. It will not work. In fact, there's a really great story about this king who lost all his hair, you know, and he wanted to be able to get his hair back, you know, and nothing was working. Nobody could help him grow that hair back. He was completely bald and he wanted his
hair back. And so he put out a message to, you know, to the whole kingdom. If there is anyone who can bring my hair back, I will give him my daughter, his beautiful princess daughter, in marriage. Okay. It's like a fairy tale. And so this fairy tale, okay. And so people came, and apparently, as Swamiji tells the story, if you fail to do it, if you fail to do it, it's heads off for you, you know. So if you're going to try to do it, make sure you can do it. Don't just play around here. Okay. It's either my daughter or death. That's it. Okay, yeah, a big, big deal. So the few people got their heads cut off. They fail. They completely failed. Okay. Okay. But so then this one guy came, and he said, you know, my lord, talking to the king, I can definitely, I have a potion for you. I know, I'm certain that it will bring your hair back. He said, okay, let me try. And he said, well, let's go into your room, and I'll set it up. And then this is something that we'll have to do, you know, every morning and afternoon and evening for about 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, it'll all start to grow. I'm positive. That's no problem. It's great. Okay, I'm ready. Thank you so much. I'm so excited. So he sets himself up, and this fellow gives him this container, of which he's supposed to take some out every day and just rub it into his scalp, okay? He says there's only one thing you need to remember, and that is when you are putting this on, never think about eggplant. Don't have that thought, because that thought will neutralize the power that will of this potion. You know, no eggplant. Okay. No. Yes. Problem. No problem. I will not think about eggplant. Okay. So he gets given this task, you know, to put it on. So this is the first time he goes to put it on. Eggplant came. Eggplant. Don't think about eggplant. Don't eggplant. This is the problem. If you tell yourself not to have a thought, then all the things that thought keeps coming. Don't have this thought. Don't have this thought. Don't have this thought. You can't do it. Exactly. Actually impossible. So it wasn't this guy's fault that his hair didn't grow. It was the king's fault. It was the king's fault, and so the king had to give over his daughter. And they went away and lived happily ever after. That's the story. Yeah, that's the story. But what is so, what Swamiji gives a lot of talks on this, you have to let your mind be, you know. You can't tell your mind, don't think about this or don't think about that, you know. Because you don't have any control over the vrittis, the thoughts that are coming up in the mind, you know. So it's not that. It's what do you do with them? What do you do with those thoughts? If it's a thought that you don't like, or it doesn't go in for your value, going along with your values or whatever, then you let it go. You know, you can say, yeah, okay, fine, you can go. So so many thoughts we just let pass, all these funny thoughts that don't have anything to do with anything, I don't have any use for them at all. You know, there's not something I want to hang on to or that it's used to getting involved. I just said, let it go, you know. But what if I were to say, don't have this thought, don't have this thought, don't have this thought, it does not work. Then your mind is just pushing against that restriction with this thought, this thought, this thought. And it'll just keep going until you say, okay, come, you can have the thought. Okay. Then you can let the thought go. It's up to you of what you do with the thought. It is the same with the raga dvesha. You should not be under their control. They are under your control in the sense of you decide. You don't blame the thought for coming or having the raga. That has nothing to do, there's no blame there. It's not like you can control. Please, ragas, don't come anymore. You know, this desire, you cannot come anymore. You cannot come anymore. They won't even, they know we're not going to play that game. They don't play that game at all. They will come. And then you do what you want with them, you know. And so say you have raga dveshas, then if there's energy behind them, they're within dharma, then you go ahead and try to fulfill it. There's not a problem there either. There's no adharma there. There's energy. I want that. But then if the raga is controlling me, that raga has to work out. I want this so that I can be happy. That's a binding desire. So all we're doing is letting ourselves, in terms of raga dvesha, pursue that raga dvesha with that prasada buddhi. You know, within dharma, if it's not within dharma, I don't do it. But I don't cavil or I don't criticize myself because that desire has come. It's just, I'm sorry, it's not within dharma, we can't do that. You know. Yeah. But it's not, it's okay that you had the desire, but no, it won't work for us, a dharma. No, okay. But that's fine. Now, say something, a raga dvesha comes that seems really exciting and I would like to have it. Fine, let's put our energy toward that. It looks good, feels right, let's do that. And then it doesn't work out, that's fine, because I accept the results as prasad from Bhagavan, you know. That's a knowledge, that's the karma yoga buddhi. But it's not telling me at all what thoughts should come, what thoughts should not come, what desire should come, what desire should not come, you know, or what dislike should come, what dislikes should not come. It's not about that. I don't have control over that. I do have control over the way I hold them and the way I respond. So here, even for a Mahatma, a Jnani, somebody who has Jnana-nishtha, they also have no control over what comes and what doesn't come. But they have complete control over what they do with it. See what I mean? And so that's a tremendous freedom. Don't tell your mind you can't do this or you can't do that. That just makes it do it. The mind, you know, the unconscious doesn't, something we teach in psychology actually, your unconscious doesn't have a negative. Like if you say don't do this, it just hears do this, you know. There's no negative there. So it's just, you have to let your mind be free, let it breathe, do what it does, but then you are the one in whose control, in whose hands these raga dveshas are, all of these thoughts are, all these emotions are. They're in my hands. I take care of them, you know. But so Krishna says, if you let the raga dvesha yourself be in their hands, you know, they're controlling you, then they become your enemy. Because they don't necessarily have your best interests at heart. These raga dveshas, who knows where you pick them up anyway? Where did you pick them up? You know, some things happened when you were little that kind of, you know, gave you a good impression, and that lands on this object. And so then your mind goes, oh, and off we go. You have no idea, you know, if that's helpful for us or not. No idea. You know, but it's dragging us along because it's in the control, right? It's in the control of us. So that, Bhagavan says, you know, never let that happen. Don't let these raga dveshas be under your control. You know, then they become an enemy for you. But the fact that they're even there for a jnani, for a great mahatma, for the most dharmic person in the universe, you know, those are all there, and a lot of other stuff too. A lot of other stuff too coming up. But it doesn't make any difference because they're coming up into my hands. And if they're not something that I want to entertain, I'm free to let it go. That's shama and dhamma. Shama and dhamma, shama means as thoughts and feelings and whatnot come up, I have a choice of what to do with them. Dhamma is, and I can let them go. It's up to me, they're in my hands. Dhamma is when they come up and somehow they just become embodied, they create a reaction or emotional reaction inside. Then they're still in my hands, except I couldn't let them go at that thought level as it comes. Okay, you go, no problem. Here it comes and it's in me. I'm stuck with it. But it's still in my hands. How am I with that raga or dvesha that I've embodied? The fact that I can hold it, can be with it, can work with it, can neutralize it, it's up to me. That's dhamma. Vishama dhamma really is so beautiful. Just let the mind be what it is. Let it breathe, let it be itself, but let it be in your hands. Most of the thoughts and feelings and things that come up, you have complete shama. They come up and they just go because they're not interesting to you, they're not what you want to pursue, just let them go. But when something comes up that isn't and grabs you, then that's something that's still in your hands. It doesn't grab you and run off with you. Like say something happens and some anger, somebody somehow has triggered you and you have some anger inside, you can be with that anger, you can hold it, you can be in dialogue with it, you can sit with it, you can work that out, you don't have to act it out. But on the other hand, that anger can be such that it overwhelms your buddhi, and then it's the anger speaking. That's the dhamma fails. The anger is speaking, you know, the anger is hitting, the anger is getting in a fight, the anger is, you know, storming off and quitting your job because you don't like the manager. It just overwhelms. And that's what's that nasha. That's that destruction that takes place. That's why it can be such a great destruction for you, what is good for you. It's because these raga dveshas and these emotions have control of you. So that paripanta, don't let that happen. Because you have to understand, this is what's so beautiful, I think, these verses. Krishna is saying, it's true for everybody that all kinds of thoughts come up, all kinds of these raga dveshas or whatever come up, you know. Even for jnani. But for jnani, there's no interest. For mumukshu, the only interest is antakarna shuddhi. That is what's primary for me, gaining a mind that can really own this knowledge. So whatever comes up, however I hold them, is always in deference to antakarna shuddhi. It doesn't matter what they are, I'm not that mad or anything that these things all come up, because that's the mind. It does what it does. But then, you know, what is primary for me is antakarna shuddhi, and so I handle them and take care of them with that karma yoga buddhi. Then it becomes very, very beautiful. But it means I have that, what we call that uparati. Uparati is one of the shama dhamma uparati to tiksha shraddha, you know, and samadhanam. This samadhi shatka, this group of six qualities. Uparati is that sannyasa vritti. Not that you're taking sannyasa, but that for me, what is primary is jnana. That's what I'm doing here. Nothing else. I'm doing many, many other things. Many, many other things. But all of them are that I'm doing. I do my dharma. I do what is to be done. I do it to the best of my ability. Receiving everything is with that Ishwara Prasada Buddhi. You know, that brings about Antakarana Shuddhi. So I do my dharma, what is to be here, what Bhagavan is asking me to do, like a servant. I try to, like a really good servant, a loyal servant. I do everything that is being asked of me to the very best of my ability. And accepting the results are not really even that important, because what is important is that I'm doing my dharma, doing what is asked of me. And whatever result comes, I take that as prasada from Bhagavan. So there's no problem. That's how I am with the creation. And I am that way because I'm a mumukshu, you know, and I want knowledge. I want self-knowledge. And so everything is in honor of that. So there's no thing that these raga dveshas are taking off with me. I don't even want the raga dveshas. I love to have the raga dveshas that are non-binding, because then I'm free. I love to have plans in the future, things that I want to do that are non-binding. You know, I love that energy. That's your own prarabdha karma, you know, moving you forward. So to have that, that's an exciting thing. Oh, this is what's coming next. That's really, and it's yours. So you'll be excited about it, because that's why you're here. So you can be excited about that and do all of these things, but only with that prasada buddhi. Otherwise, there's all of this stress and negative stuff that's going on, making a mess out of the whole thing, really. Mess out of our life for no reason. No reason. The reason is ajnana. That's not a good reason. It's the reason, but if I say, you know, you have all of these problems because you're ignorant. I think we better remove that ignorance. Right? That's what we need to do.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha.